Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Mr. Alan Stanford, Artistic Director and Executive Director of PICT Classic Theater.
Yes, indeed.
And here we are in the beautiful Charity Randall Theater on the set of your upcoming production.
Second production of the season, Waiting for Godot, which, funnily enough, was the play that brought me to Pittsburgh in the first place.
That's what I heard. And I've been enjoying reading about your illustrious career. You've got quite a resume.
Yes. I think it's 47 years as a professional this year.
Congratulations.
It's terrible.
Well, you look great.
Ah, yeah.
Some things that stood out to me in particular, Ireland's leading expert on Oscar Wilde.
On Oscar Wilde, yes.
Whose wit I have always appreciated, on stage and in text.
Oscar's known probably for his, for the wit. He didn't write a lot of plays. He died when he was 49. He was not an old man. 46, sorry. I beg your pardon. And he took to playwriting quite later on in his career. He was one of those people who soon seemed to have been a perpetual student, and then when he finally did leave Oxford, he had a whole variety of jobs. He took over as editor of a magazine called Ladies World, and changed the title immediately to Woman's World, and was one of the first people editing a magazine at the time to insist on women writers writing on women's subjects rather than men writing about ladies. He's quite innovative in that way. A genius of a mind. A phenomenal linguist. He actually passed his Greek vocal exam in Oxford. When they bring you in and they have a series of questions and you answer in the language you're doing, and his was ancient Greek. And he arrived late, and immediately he walked in, he apologized profusely and said the weather was dreadful and wondered whether the rest of the examiners had had the same problem with the rain, and that he was apologizing for his wet condition and dripping water all over the place, and asked them how they were and all sorts of questions, and they started chatting to him back. And eventually they said, "That'll do, Mr. Wilde, you've passed," because what he had done was had that conversation in ancient Greek. His mind was incredible. His use of language was phenomenal. But it's not just for his wit. He was, in fact, very socially aware. He was a poet. He was a playwright. He was a pamphleteer. He had a very sharp Irish political mind. Mm. But he used wit, use satire rather than sarcasm.
Indeed.
And had his effect. When he was released from prison, one of my favorite things, he wrote this wonderful article for the London Chronicle about the fact that young children were put in adult prisons, and it was disgraceful. But one of my favorite sort of epigrams that came out of that was the statement, "If this is how Her Majesty treats her prisoners, she doesn't deserve to have any." Which just so delightfully savage.
Do you find yourself using Oscar Wilde witticisms in everyday speech?
Whenever I possibly can.
Good. Yeah. Carry it on.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that stood out to me reading about some of the things that you've done. You directed Harold Pinter
in a production of one of his very own plays
that he himself wrote. Yes.
Now, I can't imagine directing a playwright in something they've written, let alone one with the prestige of Pinter. How did that go over?
Terrifying. No, we were doing, at the Gate Theatre in Dublin, we were doing our second retrospective of his work, and it was decided that one of the plays that we would do was his play The Collection, and the director of the Gate, my friend to that moment, but not necessarily afterwards, Michael Colgan, said, Harold wants to be in The Collection. I said, oh, that's great. He said, and you're directing it. And I said, do I have any choice? He said, no, you know, you're doing it. But it was a wonderful experience, and I got to know him quite well. And working with him on his own play, the discovery that one of the reasons his plays work so well is that Harold was first and foremost an actor.
Hmm.
He trained as an actor. His first experiences were as an actor. In fact, when he left RADA, I think his first job was in Ireland, working with one of Ireland's great old-style actor managers. So he thought like an actor, and therefore it was very easy to direct him, because in the rehearsal room, he did not behave like the playwright. He behaved like an actor.
I got to hand it to him for that. Sometimes,
oh, yes.
You know, playwrights can have a reputation.
Oh, and he did. And he could be a monster. But his passion for theater, for the art of theater, was overwhelming. Sometimes, you know, to the point of absurdity, that if somebody was coughing in the audience and he was in the theater, he'd go over and nudge them and say, stop coughing, you know. But because it was insulting to the play.
But, you know, who hasn't had the urge to do that?
Oh, I constantly do.
You actually do it.
I don't do it, but I'm not quite Harold Pinter, but the urge to do it is very extreme, especially when people's phones go off.
Mm.
Oh.
That's where you get a draw.
Because it's insulting.
Of course,
it's insulting
it
not only to the actors and to the production, to the rest of the audience.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, if you paid $50 for a ticket, the last thing you want to hear is somebody else having a phone conversation.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
I think we should have them deposit them in a bucket at the door.
I think so.
Let's talk to the board.
Work on
about
the old sort of the old Western bar principle of you hang your guns up at the door.
Exactly.
Well, I think you can hang your phones up at the
door. Yeah, I think we've got to get into that. Yes,
how
cheers.
Indeed. Civilized.
Indeed, indeed.
Mm.
So for a theater company like PICT, which specializes in Irish and classical theater, I think they've found the right guy to steer the ship here.
You're certainly well qualified.
I'm
certainly well qualified in Irish theater, and I've been doing classic theater all my life as well. I mean, I have a lifetime of a career of everything from 19th century theatre back to the Greeks.
Mm.
So in that double category of Irish and classic, and I like to use the word classic.
Rather than classical
is a particular period. It's like in music. Classical music is a particular period. It was preceded by Baroque and followed by Romantic. So I prefer the term classic, because a play can be classic that was written 5 years ago. A classic play is that which is written and valid not just for its time, but for all time. And we have modern classics. I mean, one of the greatest Greek tragedies ever written is, in a sense, is Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman.
Hmm.
Do you know, it's a classic play because it's not just of its time, it is for all time. That's the definition that I like to use. So that's the way that, you know, in future I plan to program. And that's why we've done, over the last year, we've done a lot of rebranding of the company, not only in terms of how we operate and the management structure, but also how we appear, how we present ourselves. And the use of the thematic season, we've taken that on board in a big way, so that this year's season, Something Wicked This Way Comes, is an examination of that one word. What does wickedness mean?
Hmm.
And it's got a multitude from our first show of the year, Blithe Spirit, a light comedy, through, you know, Observe the Sons of Ulster, the night before the Battle of the Somme, you know, Macbeth.
Are we allowed to say that here in the theater?
Oh, yes, you're on the stage, so you're okay, you're safe,
right.
I think. And, so we're not reforming ourselves, but we're re-examining the way we do plays and the kind of plays we do, and also in response to the audience, because we spent a lot of time last year talking to our audience
That's great.
Listening to what they wanted. We did surveys, and so the kind of programming that we're doing is in direct response to what the audience are looking for.
Yeah, it's been quite a year for PICT, when the new the title officially now is PICT Classic Theatre.
PICT Classic Theatre.
So we need to get into the habit of that.
It's not an acronym anymore. It used to be the acronym Pittsburgh Irish and Classical Theatre, but the word PICT is actually the Picts were a tribe of Celtic people who inhabited southern Scotland and the northern part of Ireland. They were a Celtic tribe. Who were, as it were, a pain in the butt in the side of the Roman Empire. So we, the Picts of Pittsburgh, will carry on that great tradition.
What good fortune. What a great transition.
Well, it was lovely. I mean, it was an ideal transition. And I think that it sort of, we are the Picts, we are the Celts, and we do classic theatre.
And the
we'll still have a big emphasis on Irish theatre.
Of course. And the season is off to a great start, you know, both on stage and in fundraising efforts, which brings me to a topic that I'd like to discuss with you today. You know, as we've been sitting here having a lovely conversation, I've been admiring your beard.
Many people do.
Yes, it's sort of your trademark.
Yes, and, yes. And the fact that I constantly stroke it, much to everybody else's amusement.
And during the Day of Giving, which took place here in Pittsburgh earlier this month, PICT set a goal of raising $15,000.
That's right.
And I believe that...
I need a drink.
Yes, I believe that you said, if we raise $15,000, I will
shave off the beard.
You'll shave your beard. Well, in fact, PICT did raise $15,000.
Yes, indeed.
As a matter of fact, the theater raised $21,182 and wait for it, 48 cents.
Who gave the 48 cents?
Well, I think maybe that comes down to fees and, you know.
Maybe they all gave 48 cents. I don't know. But anyway.
A couple of people giving their two cents.
One woman, bless her, did come up to me in the lobby one night and said, "I love your beard." I said, "Thank you." She says, "I hope you only raise $14,999. And I thought that was terribly sweet of her, but I said, I think, you know, I'd even put the extra dollar in myself because we need the money.
So is this going to be emotional for you?
Yes.
When was the last time you shaved?
About 3 years ago.
Really? So this is 3 years.
I didn't wear a beard when I played Lady Bracknell here.
Although that
would
have been
fun. It would have been fun. Yeah. No, but I think it was wise not to. It was absurd enough that I was playing Lady Bracknell. Yeah. With a beard would have been just too much.
There you go.
So yes, it has to go.
You're a man of your word.
I'm a man of my word.
Well, let's not delay.
Let's
hop to it.
Yes. All right.
Great. And we're back. Hello, young man.
I know.
Look at this. Fresh face.
Fresh face.
And ready to take on the world.
I'm only a child.
I gotta hand it to you. That was very courageous of you.
Well, yes.
To stick by your word and take off that 3 years' worth of well-earned beard for your patrons.
As I say, none of this could have happened but for the generous patrons of PICT Classic Theatre. I bless you all.
Indeed. Here's to the patrons.
Thank you.
And if there might be some left in the budget to get me some new shears, you really dulled these down. These won't cut anything now, but I'm glad it was all worth it. So you are ready to tackle Waiting for Godot.
That's correct. That's
and,
our next show.
You know, I've learned that Godot is the correct pronunciation.
It is Beckett's preferred pronunciation in English. Mm-hmm. He wrote the play originally in French, and it was titled En attendant Godot. People say he translated. He didn't translate it. He wrote it again in English, but he was insistent that it be called Waiting for Godot, because it is a much more... he wrote it not so much in English, but in Hiberno-English, the way English is spoken, especially on the east coast of Ireland. And it sounds more correct, Waiting for Godot.
So I think, you know, it's good to... you know, make your patrons aware that will be that nobody's mispronouncing it.
Nobody's mispronouncing
Godot,
it, but it's just that way. No, although interestingly, you know, there are lots of theories. Who is Godot? What is Godot?
I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's get down to the name thing.
Yes.
There is a phrase in Irish, in the Irish, Gjo, loosely meaning forever. or always.
Hmm.
But Beckett didn't say he got it from there. There are lots of other possible sources for it. He said himself, it's not God. It is absolutely not God. And why he chose that particular name, why he chose, for instance, the name of the character I play, Pozzo. Each of the characters has a very specific name. Estragon, which is the Italian for tarragon, of the ground, of rooted into the earth.
Mm-hmm.
The character, commonly called Gogo, is always rooted to the ground, sits, falls asleep. Vladimir, which, you know, we would recognize as an Eastern European name, but Vlad is king, I think. And Vladimir, high king, but always aspiring to something better, always looking up, always looking forward. Pozzo, the strange character I play, loud-mouthed, aggressive, fundamentally incredibly vulnerable. Pozzo is the Italian word for a well, or an empty hole, just full of echoes, but nothing in there. And the fourth character, Lucky, Pozzo's servant, and Beckett was asked, why was he called Lucky? He said, probably because he has no expectations. Expectations are what make us hope. If you have no expectations, you have no hope and you're lucky. Anyway, they're just names, they're just words. The play is infinitely more important.
Now, I have seen this play, I have read this play, I was even in a student production of it in college, and I still beg the question, what is this play about?
And without wishing to give you a trite answer, the play is about everything.
Hmm.
It is about the nature of human frailty. And the play is explained, Beckett himself said, it's explained in Lucky's speech, this famous speech that Lucky makes. Lucky's only got two lines. One is five words long and the other is two pages. But Lucky's speech explains what the play is about, and it's redefined over and over again. If I were to give a simple answer, what is Waiting for Godot about? It's about waiting. What is Endgame about? It's about ending. What is Happy Days about? It is about happy days, or our determination to have them. In Waiting for Godot, the proposition is put forward that you get born, and then in spite of what you believe, in spite of the philosophies, in spite of the faith and the religion and the exercise and the good eating and all the other things you do during the course of your life, you will all end up in, as Beckett says, an abode of stones.
Hmm.
Graveyard. In other words, you get born, and you die. What do we do in the meantime?
Wait.
Precisely. We are always waiting for something. And what we're waiting for is an expectation, be it an expectation of a meal, a job, a marriage, a child, anything. We spend our lives in a position of waiting. And what is Godot? Godot is what you're waiting for.
It's so complex, yet so simple.
It is utterly simple. The whole point about the play is that it is not complex. The play is simple. It is a simple proposition of the games we play while waiting. And everything that happens in this play, and it is a very male play in that sense, and I know there have been productions done by women. Beckett never liked that because he wrote it in one particular thought process, and his argument was, well, if you want to write a similar play about women, it would be a different play, mm-hmm. because women do different things while waiting. But the play itself, if you don't try to complicate it, it becomes phenomenally simple and phenomenally clear.
Excellent.
And very funny.
Now, this is not your first time wrestling with Godot.
No, as I mentioned, this very play was the reason I came to Pittsburgh. What I always described as my mothership, since I am a resident alien, my mothership was the Gate Theatre in Dublin, and I worked there, man and boy, for 35 years. Back in 1988, we did a production of Waiting for Godot, and the plan was that Beckett would come and direct it, but he was ill and couldn't do it. So the version we were going to do was his own revision of the play, which had taken place in 1975 at the Schiller Theatre in Germany, when he re-edited the play and finally sort of drew down the roadmap of how he wanted the play to be done. And he worked with a German director called Walter Asmus, who was his assistant. Volta, because Beckett couldn't come and direct it, Volta came and directed it, and we followed very much the absolute guidelines that Beckett had laid down at the Schiller, including the edit. And to the best of my knowledge, this is only the second time that edit's been done in America.
Oh, really?
It may have been done elsewhere, I'm not sure, but I certainly know that the first time that I know it was done here was in 2007 in the Byam Theatre by the Gate Theatre when I was in it, and now today we got special permission to use this version. So that was it. With that particular production, we toured the world, China, Australia, all over Europe. We did three tours of America. We did Canada. 20 years. On and off, the same four actors, basically, for coming back to it time and time and time again for 20 years. And getting older together in it. And
wow.
We were already four actors who knew each other very well. We'd worked together a lot. And suddenly we come together and do this play. And then we just stuck at it. So over 20 years, it got, I suppose, in a way, purer and purer and purer. Somebody asked me once, the way you do it is so simple. What would it be like if you're doing it, this was in its 15th year. What will it be like if you're doing another 15 years? I said, well, we'll probably walk onto the stage, look at each other, mutter quietly, and everybody will think it's wonderful. But we just kept doing less and less and less, and it got simpler and simpler and simpler.
Wow.
So in my first sort of full season, planning the season, I do think that it is the most significant play of the 20th century. I think this was the play, in the way that Shakespeare changed the way plays were written, I think Beckett in the 1950s changed the way plays were written forever and had such a deep influence on Harold Pinter, we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Huge influence on Pinter, huge influence on Mamet, huge influence on Edward Albee. Without Beckett, modern theatre probably would not be what it is today. These plays changed the way writers thought about writing and the way actors thought about acting.
And even somebody who may be very familiar with this particular classic,
yes,
they're going to see something a bit different
they
in
are.
This production.
In this production, it is A, the text that Beckett finally edited. B, it follows the guidelines. It's not the same production I was in here in 2007. This is a picked production. The director is Aoife Spillane Hinks, who was with us last year doing, she directed Our Class. Wonderful production.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still following the Beckett notebook, the Beckett roadmap, as it were. So there are things that are different because every actor brings a different texture to it. And even I've found, I played the part for 20 years, I'm finding different things every day in rehearsal.
Wow.
Just because of the way the other actors are taking up the dialogue and through their imagination and through their own simplicity, finding new rhythms, new textures, new meanings.
And that's incredible, having done the show as many times as you have.
Well, I think it's a testament to the play.
Absolutely.
That, I could do this play for the rest of my life, and very possibly may. And,
waiting
for a twin. And still keep finding new things, because in all those 20 years, there was never a performance that we didn't come off stage and say, I spotted that. That was interesting. You did something there. You just keep finding things.
It keeps on giving.
It's a play that keeps on giving, yeah.
So,
rather like my beard.
Right. So get growing that. And
yeah.
Patrons can come and see this again and again and perhaps, get something out of watching it,
That's it. You see, I know that we've had patrons in the past who will come back to this play and think they've seen it, and they come and see it again and realize, no, they hadn't quite seen it.
Mm-hmm.
There was always something new to find.
Absolutely. June 4th it opens and runs through the 21st, Waiting for Godot.
Waiting for Godot.
We can't wait for it to get...
Good.
That was terrible.
And don't wait to book. Book
right.
Early. Book early, book often.
It may very well be a sellout.
It may very well be a sellout.
So yes, and I love the material here. Look what we've picked for you.
Well, not
did you
only
come up with that clever slogan?
Yes,
there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Bravo. That's
fun. I have absolutely no shame when it comes to cheap gags.
Good.
But it does. But that's the point. In fact, there's a sort of a subliminal message in that. We picked for you. It's not us doing plays. It's not simply. I don't think a theatre is about what a director wants to do, or a group of actors want to do. It's about the relationship the game that is played between the actors and the audience. And the audience, a play doesn't exist until an audience is watching.
It's kind of like if a tree falls in the middle of the woods and nobody's around, does it make a sound?
That's the thing. A play doesn't make a sound unless an audience is watching. In the book, it's a script. On the floor, it's a rehearsal. With all the costumes and lights, it's still a dress rehearsal. It's only when the audience are there with us that it becomes a play. Because we the actors and they the audience, we enter this game. It's called the willing suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a game we all play with one another. And that playing is what makes theatre alive. That's why theatre is so much more important than cinema or anything else. Because it's living art. It's the original 3D. And so when I say, look what we've picked for you, we have picked it for that audience, and it's in very much in response to what that audience wants to see.
Bravo.
And we try hard.
And they are in for a treat.
I promise them. Look at the tree.
Gado. I know, we're right here. Yeah, and again, I want to say that we are on set, so this is...
it's not finished yet, so don't take...
Right.
But it is the tree.
I kind of feel like we might, it has a energy to it already. You know?
Well, yeah, that's the theater for you.
Indeed.
You can't help it.
You
can't. Walk on a stage and you go, oh yes.
So we invite everybody to come out and feel that for themselves.
Absolutely.
For Gado and for the rest of your season, which will be followed by Woman in Scarecrow.
Fabulous play by a wonderful new Irish writer, or relatively new Irish writer, Marina Carr. She's coming over for it.
Very good.
Which I'm delighted.
And Observe the Sons of Ulster Marching Towards the Somme?
Yes, it's set, it's a sort of American, or rather, it's a sort of an Ulster 1914-18 war band of brothers. But it's about a group of young recruits, Ulster Protestant recruits, who come together, don't like each other, grow into this band of brothers, and the final scene takes place at dawn before the first Battle of the Somme, where 50,000 British and Irish troops were slaughtered in the first few hours.
Wow.
So it's about the wickedness that's coming there is war.
And along with the theme of wicked, we then move to Shakespeare with Macbeth.
Which is where the title of the play comes from, in fact. Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's my idea, but Shakespeare wrote it.
Ah! He beat you to it, that son of a gun.
Slightly. 450
years. And we close with Great Expectations in December.
Yeah, beautiful. A beautiful adaptation. It's one of Dickens' favorite, people's favorite Dickens novels. And it was done it was written when I was working in the Gate Theatre. Hugh Leonard, I don't know if people remember, about 3 years ago, we did a Sherlock Holmes called The Mask of Moriarty.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular. And Hugh Leonard wrote that. And he also was a genius at adapting novels. So the Gate commissioned this particular adaptation for me from Hugh Leonard. For me to direct, and we've actually done it twice in the Gate, and now we're doing it here. It's a gorgeous adaptation with a wonderful cast, including the divine Mary Rawson as Miss Havisham. Macbeth is going to have a wonderful cast, David Whalen as the eponymous, I was going to say hero, but is he?
Murder. Stay tuned and find
Stay
out.
Stay tuned
right.
and find
if,
out.
If you don't know how it ends,
yeah.
find out. You've got one heck of a season
it's
here,
a good
Alan.
Season,
congratulations.
Thank
We're
you
looking
so
forward
much.
To all of this. And thanks for chatting today and being such a brave soul with the, your
Had
transformation.
To Had to be done. Right. But it will be back.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Ah, yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.